Greetings, Portland Trailblazer fans, and welcome to this edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. We hope you're finding us on Stitcher, on iTunes, from your friends and neighbors. However you found us, we are glad that you are here. I am Dave Deckard, managing editor of BlazersEdge.com, along with my amazing, wonderful, and quite happy tonight co-host, Dan Morang. Dan, the Blazers are 1-0 on the new season. Yes, it's preseason, but time to get hyped. Time to declare them the next champions of the world, 98-89 over the Utah Jazz. How do you feel right now?
Honestly, it went really well, and it's nice to have basketball season here. As the weekend was kind of rolling through, I definitely wasn't getting to enjoy basketball as I normally do with some things going on here, so it was nice to kind of relax, unwind, and enjoy some Blazer basketball right out of the gate. And it was actually a really it wasn't your normal preseason game where there was just garbage basketball left and right. There was actually some really nice basketball being played tonight.
Absolutely. I mean, the Jazz are projected to be one of Portland's main rivals in the Northwest Division, along with the Thunder, of course. But the Thunder lost tonight, gave up 142 points, which may not be a promising sign even in preseason. But Utah is expected to be pretty tight. They got some veteran help. They've got some players back. They are supposed to be pretty good defensively, and their offense is coming around. Yet it was Portland that actually defended better tonight, eh?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I've been calling for probably the last year and a half now is for Portland to up their defensive intensity and their aggression on the defensive end. And it looked like that was something that they pushed on in training camp, because they came out of the gate, they extended the defense, they didn't sit back near as much as they normally do. They put a ton of pressure on the ball, a lot of hands in passing lanes. Harkless ended up with a handful of steals. Crabbe got his hands on a few balls. CJ McCollum tipped a few out. Plumlee got a few deflections. It was a really active and aggressive defense. It definitely a change from what we've seen from the Trailblazers in the past.
It's sort of what we were calling for last year. I mean, because look, their calling card was mobility, right? That's why you got these new acquisitions. And yet, they weren't exactly icing every play, but they were still kind of playing back as if Robin Lopez were still on the team, as if you could guard the middle like that. Instead, you know, why have the mobile centers? Why have players who are young and springy if you don't go out and chase the ball? And tonight they did, and it worked.
Yeah, no, it was really nice to see the wings get out and press the ball. Evan Turner did a pretty decent job coming out and picking up early. McCollum was surprisingly effective on Rodney Hood. Hood is a guy who is probably a better version of Allen Crabbe at this point in time, a more fluid athlete, probably a little bit better shooter from everywhere on the floor. Maybe not statistically, but just the way he feels. But on the offseason, you could tell one thing he worked on was putting the ball on the floor. Both Crabbe and McCollum both did a really, really good job on him tonight, forcing him to pick up his dribble before he wanted to, forcing him off his spots. Like I said, McCollum generated a few steals, got his hands on a few balls. There was a little bit of a defensive scheme change, it felt like, on Gordon Hayward. They were going under a lot of screens on him, forcing him to shoot. I don't know if that was necessarily a game plan focus or something the Trailblazers are doing actively, but it was definitely, particularly when it comes to Hayward, because he had a subpar shooting season. That's what kind of leads me to believe that was part of a game plan, but it seemed to take the Jazz out of what they wanted to do early on.
Yeah, you know, the Blazers have valued the three-point arc so much, not just offensively, but defensively. And you would often see them try to fight through or go around screens that they just weren't capable of doing, not just because the guards weren't making it, but because the big men weren't really aggressive on defending screens either. And you know, if the guards are going to go under a little bit, that adds another dimension, I think, to the big man's ability to make choices, to be able to cover either, you know, step up or step back, as opposed to, oh my gosh, I'm strung out now trying to guard two people because my guard's late or my guard didn't make it, and now I can watch neither.
Yeah, you know, it's perfect. As always, you're kind of teeing this one up for me. There was one play in particular where McCollum went under and got caught a little bit, and it forced a switch, and Ed Davis ended up picking up Rodney Hood just inside the three-point line. Ed Davis, I mentioned it on Twitter, he played absolutely textbook defense. Hood dribble penetrated. Davis backed up a little too far. Hood went to the step back. Instead of biting on the pump fake, Davis recovered, stayed down, got his hands up, got a piece of the shot, and forced Hood into a god-awful attempt. And it was kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week. If Ed Davis can get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, and he can still maintain that lateral ability, that quickness, and that defensive intensity without sacrificing that by packing on the extra weight, good on him. And tonight we saw a little bit of that. He played really well inside. Both him and Plumlee actually did a decent job inside. Gobert is not a guy who's going to create for himself, and he, as he will, feasted on the rebounds a little bit. I think that was probably the weakest part of Portland's defense tonight. And I think that kind of goes hand in hand when you're a little bit more aggressive defensively. Your bigs are going to get a little bit further out of position. It's going to pull them a little bit further away from the rim and make it a little bit harder to rebound, particularly against guys like Favors and Gobert, who are fantastic rebounders on both sides of the ball. So I think the Blazers may be willing to sacrifice that in particular situations. I think that the thought was going in is that you may cede the rebounding battle to them right out of the gate. So if you did give up a few others, but you generated a few turnovers in the process, it became a little bit more of a wash.
Yeah, and look, this is one preseason game, so it's hard to draw any conclusions. That said, the Jazz did shoot 44% from the three-point arc, which is a big no-no. But they only took 16 shots, and they only shot 41% from the field. I think against certain teams, the Blazers can make that strategic decision that they're going to let you shoot some threes as long as you're not putting up 30 of them. If you're not a good three-point shooting team, cut off what the other team does well. And like you say, get your hands in the passing lane. Make it difficult for them to make any plays. Make them, in essence, settle for the three. That they're going to look at their percentage and be pretty happy, but it just doesn't end up generating enough points to make a difference.
Yeah, the Jazz, for pretty much the entirety of my lifetime, have been a team that have dominated the paint. So if you're going to seed the long shot to Quinn Snyder's Jazz, as whether it's Jerry Sloan's Jazz or whoever, I think that's part of the game plan going in. And a couple times tonight, Dante Exum got free at the three-point line, and then it's Dante Exum. This is a guy who, coming into the league, is a fantastic athlete, an incredible passer and ball handler, but had one of the brokest jumpers you've ever seen. Now, he knocked down a couple tonight, and you could tell that there's been whoever the shot doctor is for the Jazz needs to get a raise and a big one, because Exum's jumper has been completely reworked from what it was. So, you know, the Blazers scouting is, hey, let Exum shoot. If he makes it, he makes it. Again, you're talking about, what, you know, 16 three-pointers attempted. That's not a huge total. Now, if this is James Harden's Rockets, you're not going to see those same shots when they're jacking up 40-plus threes a night. So, analytically, you're looking at it, and you're exactly right. You got to take a look at who you're giving them to. Gordon Hayward, he played pretty well tonight and had his normal, quiet, efficient night. Trey Lyles looked really good for them coming off the bench. What's strange is that some of the veteran guys they brought in, and George Hill and Boris Diaw, didn't seem to have quite the impact you would expect. And honestly, you know, as we're talking about competing within the division, it looked like the Jazz looked like in this game like Portland looked like in their preseason last year. You could see all the pieces there. You could see the promise. But that lack of experience and cohesion within the units was evident. And the same can be said for Portland and in the opposite perspective. You could see the cohesion within the units and how well they played together and how well they gelled. The only areas that looked a little bit off were when guys like Napier and Turner were in there and not exactly certain where they needed to be and when they needed to be there.
Of course. And really, to be fair, though, Ask Joe Johnson or Boris Diaw whether they care about preseason game one. They're going to say,
yeah, no.
There's a reason, because I'm not going to blow my wife. It's not that they intentionally play bad, but they're like, okay, dude, you know, talk to me when the games start counting and really talk to me in the playoffs. So you kind of get it. But you're right. The chemistry, the cohesion should kind of go Portland's way because, okay, yeah, you've got Turner on board, but Everybody else slated for major minutes has already played with each other, has a full season under their belt. So obviously they're good with that. Now let's talk about the offense. Now the Blazers shot 38% from three-point range themselves. And by the way, they seeded 44%, but look at the three-pointers made. Utah made 7. The Blazers made 13. Do you think they'll take the lower percentage and double up the number of three-pointers made? Yes, they will. And by the way, the Blazers made more field goals than the Jazz did as well. The only reason that this game was even barely close, and it kind of wasn't, but that it wasn't a total blowout, is still the Blazers have problems on the free throw line, both generating free throws and making the free throws they do generate. But I think, you know, 48% from the field, 38% from the three-point arc, the Blazers can take that all night long and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Blazers actually changed their style and tempo a bit from the last season. Again, this is only one game. Let's go ahead and caveat everything here. But they were very, very aggressive, particularly Lillard and McCollum and Allen Crabbe. Going to the rim. Last year, Lillard, early in games, usually picked and choose kind of where he would attack, and it was usually a long-range jumper. Lillard was incredible. Is there something about Rudy Gobert? I don't know if Dame and Gobert had this. Had something happen sometime.
You noticed this, have you?
Oh, man, he wants to embarrass him.
He lights up. He lights up like
oh, you're a shot blocker? No, you're not. And you could see it in Gobert's face. He gets visibly angry every time Dame does this to him. He had 3 or 4 incredible acrobatic finishes, and you're like, okay, Dame, it's preseason. Please don't hit the floor like a sack of bricks. Stop doing that. Okay, I get it. You're embarrassing Gobert. Stop hitting the floor. But he had a couple just fantastic finishes at the rim, and you're like, okay, that's really nice. He only ended up shooting 1 of 4 from three, but inside, Lillard was just absolutely lethal. Allen Crabbe, this is kind of one of the guys that I wanted to highlight a bit. He was phenomenal pretty much everywhere on the floor. Catch and shoot three. He created off his own dribble into a little dribble step back move, a little hesitation move where he picked up and drove to the rim, a couple where he caught on the run off flare screens and pin downs. And instead of curling and stopping at the free throw line, if you ever look at an Allen Crabbe shot chart, it's pretty much the entire arc and then both free throw elbows. Tonight, he was driving and turning the corner past that elbow, and he had a couple in between. He went to the CJ McCollum School of Floaters. Yeah. In the summertime, because, man, he hit 2 or 3 absolutely perfect runners and floaters.
It feels like, okay, that last year the Blazers were playing basketball 101 a little bit, and very solidly, by the way. Look, you get to your spot, you take a quality shot. You almost could have done that old game where you put the circles on the floor and ask a person to make one shot from every circle to win a car or something like that. You could, the Blazers were taking percentage shots. Okay, great. It feels like, well, and again, preseason, but it feels like the Blazers are going to play basketball 202 this year, where they look at McCollum, where they look at Crabbe and say, you know what? You can do this stuff. Let's bring back a little bit of 80s basketball. Let's bring back a little bit of good scoring from all over the court and keeping the opponent off balance, because you've shown us, you've passed 101. Now let's add wrinkles to it.
Yeah, a couple of these guys are working on their master's thesis in Lillard and McCollum, and then the other guys are definitely on to their sophomore and junior courses for sure. Crabbe definitely stood out from the crowd tonight. He has expanded his game. He's not going to cross you up like Steph Curry, but the fact that he can put the ball on the floor and create for himself and you're not worried about him putting the ball on the floor says a ton about what he can do right now. So that's really huge. The other
if
guy...
If that keeps up, because, I mean, that was the thing with Crabbe last year. I mean, he could score from all over the court. So could McCollum. But McCollum was clearly superior with the ball in his hand, Allen Crabbe. Also, with the exception of those two, and even in some ways with those two, 90% of the time, you could tell that any given Blazer was going to do 1 of 2 or 3 things. And some Blazers were only going to do one thing. And if you can get a little bit of that, keeping the defense guessing, if Allen Crabbe might do 6 things, and I don't mean fancy dribbles, but I mean he can pull up, or he can take 2 dribbles and pull up, or he can go to the hole, or he can drive and pass. Now you've got something kind of special.
Yeah, when you start opening up that playbook, and that's when you can see a couple things start to happen. And it actually kind of leads into the next guy I was going to talk about, Maurice Harkless. And Crabb had one possession where he caught on the right sideline, a little left-to-right crossover, got to the baseline, the help defense came, and instead of panicking, he goes up in the air, which, you know, coaches hate seeing probably, but he goes up in the air and threads a cross-court rope pass to Harkless in the opposite corner, who knocks down the three. And that's not, you're not used to seeing Alan Crabb dribble drive cross-court pass to an open shooter in the corner. That if you're looking up the history of Alan Crabb, I'm fairly certain that's the first time it's happened. And that's great to see. And Harkless is something we haven't talked about yet. He got the surprising nod in the starting lineup tonight. So starting lineup, Dame, CJ, Aminu, Plumlee, kind of what we figured. Who's going to be that third guy? Ended up being Harkless. Now, if you wanted to ask who had the best game tonight, it's probably between Harkless and Crabb. Harkless did a little bit of everything. Defensively, picked up everyone from Hood to Gobert and Favors at times. And offensively, he badly missed his first three, and then in the third quarter, knocked down a couple in a row and showed some little more consistent shooting form and ability. So I think what you're getting from Harkless is on both ends of the floor, again, talking about the defense, but offensively a reliable shooter and somebody who defenses they can't sink off of as much as they would have last year otherwise. So there's a couple of bright spots from the guys. You know what you're getting from Lillard and McCollum. So when you're getting this extra stuff from Crabb, from Harkless, heck, Napier, you're really ecstatic when you see stuff like that.
And I think this game can be indicative, even though it's only preseason game one, in terms of, so look, I mean, Lillard and McCollum got most of the shots and Crabb pretty much came next. All of them had a relatively equal number of assists in practically the same amount of minutes. That's about what you're going to see. I mean, everything's going to be notched up again by half. Lillard's not going to play 23 minutes. He's going to play 33. But the proportion seemed about right for what the Blazers will try to do this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was time we should probably talk about the new guy in Evan Turner and what he brought into here. And Turner was kind of a mixed bag. You could tell he wasn't completely comfortable in the system yet. He did a decent job defensively. There wasn't a time in the game where I thought he blew an assignment or got caught somewhere he shouldn't be. His help defense was nice. In the pick and roll game, he bodied guys, forced guys off their spots. All that stuff was good. Offensively, you could tell that he wanted to create, but he wasn't quite sure when and where to create. There was twice where he tried to thread wrap passes to Ed Davis, and Ed Davis is not a guy you thread wrap passes to.
Or any passes.
Yeah. lob passes in the post or lob passes to the rim. Those are
or
passes.
Just shoot it. Yeah. Shoot it. He'll rebound it, dude.
Exactly. He did show his go-to move, that little hesitation through legs crossover, pull up at the free throw line. He went to that, I believe, two or three times. He even knocked down a three. He also airballed a three. So the Evan Turner mixed bag was definitely on display, but you could see the instincts there. Having the secondary or tertiary playmaker on the floor was evident at times when he was out there with Lillard and McCollum. That, I think, speaks volumes because teams were forced to pay him attention. There was a couple times where he drove the lane and drew the attention of other defenders, and you could see how much the defense collapses. Now, if he's on the floor at the same time as either McCollum and Lillard or McCollum and Crabb or Lillard and Crabb, those guys are going to get some wide-open three-pointers. I mean, if the defense does anything like it did tonight, and the Jazz are a good defensive team, if they collapse like they did on him, those guys are going to feast from the three-point line. So it was nice to see.
Seems like the Blazers, I mean, they're going to go with those athletic forwards, with Aminu and Harkless. But if you crack that, they're going to come back with three guards. Or in essence, they're going to come back with three playmakers, three potential scorers. They're just going to say, okay, default plan, overwhelm you with people who can dribble, with people who aren't afraid to score.
Yeah, and it's really the modern NBA. You look around the league and the Warriors, I mean, when they went to their lineup of death or whatever you want to call it, literally all five guys can put the ball on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts.
Blazers are a few short of that. But
we're at four at best, probably. You could screw with Lillard, McCollum, Turner or Crabb, one of those guys, and Harkless and Aminu, and you could argue for 3.5.
Yeah, heavy on the half. I think it's fair to say, though, that, okay, like you said, you know what you're going to get from the guards and Allen Crabb, big bonus. You also know what you're going to get from the bigs. I mean, the production isn't as good and the bonus isn't as big. But, you know, when you put Mason Plumlee, when you put Ed Davis on the floor, in essence, you know what's coming out. Myers Leonard will be a different wrinkle, but he's not playing yet. It's fair to say that the middle is still the part you have questions about. The Turners, the Aminus, the Harklesses, despite his good play tonight. If there's a soft underbelly in there, that's about where it is. Not because they're bad, but just because you do not know what you're going to get every night from them.
Yeah, your solid baseline isn't there like it is with Lillard and McCollum. Those guys are going to give you, you know, 42.5, 44 points a night, and that's a normal night. The rest of these guys, you're not 100% certain what you're going to get night in, night out. Now,
well, even with the bigs, though, I mean, you know you're going to get rebounding. You know if you play aggressively, you can take advantage of their mobility. They're at least known quantities that you can compensate for. And by the way, Lillard and McCollum exist and are getting that many shots because Plumlee and Davis and company do not, I mean, and cannot take that many shots. But you got guys like Aminu, who is supposedly, you know, supposed to mix this up, get rebounds and three-pointers and play great defense, but you seldom see all those things happening on the same night.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is, if this team does manage to put it all together in a given night, they're going to blow teams off the floor. I mean, that's the thing about this is that the floor for those guys probably isn't as low as some people may think, but their ceiling is pretty darn high. And I can understand why there's a lot of people who think that the Blazers are going to surpass 46.5 wins, you know, out of Vegas this year. I'm still, like, you know, when we're going into this, that was the number that I picked before Vegas rolled it out. It was 46.5 sounded like it would be about right. And you're not getting me to lay money on that one, on the under or the over. That number is just way too nice to mess with. So I think Vegas is gonna do pretty well in making their money back on Portland this year.
But, I mean, come on, though, Dan. If you know anything about advanced statistics, you'll know that last year the Blazers exceeded Vegas's prediction by like 20 games. So this year, obviously, I mean, their win total is 66, right? If trends continue.
That's the trend modeling right there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Right. One year sample.
There's a reason why I make money anytime I gamble. It's because I don't do it again.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, tonight was a really good night. There wasn't normally when I'm sitting down and watching preseason games, there's a lot that I'm looking for, and I'm not looking at particular players. I'm looking at what things are different, and the good things that were there last year were still there, but there was more goodness on top of it. The defense was definitely to me the shining light. The way they got after it was really impressive.
The defense was the main change. Now, some caveats to that. Turnovers are fantastic. And by the way, the Blazers generated 19, made the Jazz cough it up 19 times. Okay. And aggressiveness is fantastic. There is a ceiling to that. If your baseline defense is not really, really solid, you can still win a lot of regular season games. I mean, the classic is Washington Wizards, circa Gilbert Arenas, that era. They were famous for forcing turnovers, getting after it on defense. They did really well. Every time they came up against a really good team that didn't cough up the ball, they were lost. Now, Portland isn't that. I don't think Portland is that gimmicky, but the turnovers are great as long as they are frosting on top of a cake.
Yeah, you
if
can't
the cake's
rely
not there,
on
it's going to collapse.
Yeah, you can't sit there and rely on turnovers like that. And this is probably a poor example, but the Warriors were a team that feasted on them. And in the playoffs, that's something that tends to dry up because possessions are valued a lot more. But I do like the fact that Portland can turn it up a few notches defensively. And I think that was what, to me, was the takeaway from tonight.
And just get out on the floor and bother somebody. I mean, even last year, even when the defense was pretty good, all right, you did not get the sense that opponents were bothered by the Blazers. And they haven't been for a long time. I mean, the last Trailblazer that really, really bothered an opponent on defense, I think, was when Greg Oden had the occasional flash. He had maybe 3-4 games like this, but when he really got it going, he changed the way people played. And the Blazers haven't been able to change the way anybody plays for years. So if they can at least make somebody think twice, that's a step ahead.
Yeah, being able to dictate a possession is huge. If you can dictate a possession, if by the time the NBA season rolls around, every team has their playbook from last year with a few new wrinkles. But for those that don't know that are out there, these NBA players, they know their opposing team's playbooks. When a coach calls out a play from the sideline, it's not like these guys don't know the play that's coming. And how they force it and how they dictate to the offense how that play is going to be run says a lot about how a defense is playing and how cohesive they are and how aggressive they are. So if Portland can get out there and break up possessions, particularly on key plays, like out-of-bounds plays, Portland has been lauded for the, you know, since Terry Schatz has gotten here for how good he is on out-of-bounds plays. And that's because they change things up and they dictate to a defense what's going to happen through misdirection and things of that nature. Defensively, if you can do the same thing to an offense, those are huge, huge plays that can swing the balance of a game. And again, this is only one game. It's just the preseason. I get it. But it's
said that six times.
Yeah, I know.
I think we can retire that, but that's okay.
But it's promising.
Yeah. It's hope. It's look, there was wild hope that there was some kind of defense going to come out of the fog here, but it was foggy. People were stumbling forward. Now, this is a glimmer of light. Is there a new wrinkle? Is there finally a letting loose of that athletic potential on that end of the floor? You can hope. And at least in game one or game 0.1, the Blazers are giving you reason for that. Now, you already said defense is the development of the night. Who's the player of the night for you?
It's probably a toss-up between Harkless and Crabbe, but I'll probably give it to Harkless. Harkless did it on both ends and really brought it tonight. I think that's a guy who sees that he has a chance to vie for that starting spot, and he wants to seize it, which is really great to see. So,
is he also the surprise of the night then?
It's between him and Napier. Napier came out and really surprised me, and David McKay has said that at training camp and practice, he's looked phenomenal, and his intensity and his ability to go after guys has been huge. And he came in and looked really, really good. Napier was probably a guy that surprised a few people tonight, and it's nice to have that insurance policy that, heaven forbid, something happened to one of the guards, that you're not terrified of him having to come in and play relief minutes. And honestly, he's a guy that if Blazers get ahead in a game, you're not worried about ceding the reins to and letting one of these guys get some extended rest at a given period. So that was definitely nice to see as well.
So let's move on. The Oklahoma City Thunder lost to Real Madrid, 142-137. Now, I don't think this is a huge deal because basically they didn't play their starters for much of the game. That said, it shows you how the world is different in Oklahoma City because they no longer have anybody but their starters. They're all hands on deck, front-loading the roster now that Durant is gone. But I don't know. Are you having a hard time getting over Durant not being there? Because I confess, when I heard, okay, Oklahoma City's playing Real Madrid, I thought, well, I wonder how Durant did. And then it's like, oh, right. Is that going to be an adjustment for you?
No. You know what's really strange about the whole thing with Durant, Oklahoma City, is I never saw the Thunder as Durant's team. As weird as that sounds, whenever I thought of the Thunder, as great as Durant is, and he's arguably the second best player in the NBA, I always thought of it as Russell Westbrook's team. And while I often chided Durant or Westbrook for not deferring to Durant as being the better player, I always thought that Westbrook was the guy that was the heart and soul of that team, and kind of the leadership of it, whether good or bad, all fell on Westbrook. So for me, it's always been one of those things where, or it's been one of those things since Durant left, that it's not as hard for me to adjust to see Westbrook as the alpha or as the face of the franchise, because he's kind of been that guy.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I agree to the extent that you compare those two head to head. I think Durant is the better overall player, but that certainly Westbrook is sharper. He cut sharper. Durant ended up being kind of a hammer, and Westbrook was the dagger, and the dagger stabbed a lot more times for every swing of the hammer, and drew more blood in a lot of cases. But it's still weird.
I'll grant that.
I'm having trouble adjusting to them not being in the driver's seat, and I just don't think they are now. I think had Durant come back, they would have had a phenomenal lineup. I think Oladipo was the guy they were waiting for. I think Sabonis would be great for them and would have been great alongside Durant too. I think Sabonis would have been like picking up candy off the ground, playing off of those two. But now it's just like, it's a weird feeling. It's like, I don't know, like when you've experienced a loss or something like that, like a personal, I don't want to over compare it, but when like you've lost someone or lost your job and you're walking down the street and everything looks more or less the same, but it's removed, it's empty, there's something not meaning what it used to mean. That's exactly what I'm looking at. And I'm going like, oh, wow, these guys are in our division. And now they don't exist in that same meaningful way they used to. It is possible for the Blazers to take the Northwest. And I think tonight showed it.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think the best way to put it is like, if you ever had a house that you grew up in and you move away and you come back and you drive the same streets, it feels familiar, but not quite the same. Mm-hmm. There's a level of detachment that's there, and it's kind of strange because tonight was one of those things where I think a lot of people that who have heard me say that I think the Jazz are a team that could be really good. Like, see, look what they're doing. I wouldn't go that far yet. This is a team that's still working in a ton of guys. You got to remember, Exum's just coming back. Favors and Gobert had a ton of injuries. You're working in Joe Johnson and Boris Diaw, and Hayward's coming off of a subpar season. I think if you give those guys a chance, that this is a team that you're going to see Portland battle with extensively over the next few years. But Portland certainly has a chance to win the division.
I think it's fair to say that no team in the Northwest Division is going to be great. That's just not in the DNA of the teams you have there. All teams in the Northwest Division are going to be anywhere from decent on the low side to pretty darn good on the high side, and they're all going to be mushed together. I mean, you're not going to see a stratification. You may see two or three wins separate two or three of these teams.
That's ultimately what I expect, is that those three teams between Oklahoma City, Utah, and Portland, it's going to be a five-win barrier between those teams.
Yeah, and Minnesota, they'll probably be behind this season, but as we keep saying, they're not that far behind.
They're one big run away from being in that.
Right. I mean, if they have a really good season, they will be right there. There's no solid barrier between the three teams you expect to compete for the division crown and the Timberwolves. There's just the law of averages is probably going to catch up to Minnesota, but that may not be true in another 2 years. So it's going to be, and by the way, who among these teams has a lot of juice like coming up? I mean, who has the draft picks? Who has the rising star? I mean, Minnesota is as close as you get to that, right? And they're in the trail spot right now. So this could get really good over the next couple of years.
Yeah, you look at how these teams are constructed around the division, and none of the teams are old. You take a look at like the Southwest Division; those teams are old. Those teams are all really old. And you take a look at the Northwest, there's not an old team in the group. I mean, Lillard's Lillard and Turner are probably the oldest guys on the Blazers roster now, or Ed Davis and Evan Turner are the two oldest guys on the roster right now. Maybe Steensma. So, I mean, you're talking about guys with 7 years experience. That's it.
So the Northwest may become the new Southwest. I mean, you remember the days when, you know, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Memphis, you know, all that. It was just like, it was nasty. And all of them were good. And actually, a couple of them were great. But it was always going to be a knockdown dragout. And a couple years from now, Portland could be in the middle of this. Now, before we go, we need to ask the question of the night. This was the first run for new Trailblazer broadcast team, Kevin Calabro, Lamar Hurd. What were your impressions of the brand new duo starting out?
So I sit down, I turn on the TV, and I hear Kevin Calabro and Lamar Hurd. And as many times as I've heard Kevin Calabro call a game, and it's quite a few, it sounded really, really foreign without Mike Barrett and Mike Rice. It probably took me 10 minutes to kind of get into the flow of the game. And it was really, this isn't, you know, to knock them or anything like that. It's just when you're so used to a format and a flow and how things are going to go for good or bad, that familiarity just breeds just a level of comfort. And so it felt like I was watching a feed from another team cover the Blazers.
Yeah, and this is what you're going to get. I mean, not only during the break-in period, but this is intentional, is it not? The team, I think, wants to become more professional in a more than provincial way, okay? Because you can do provincial Blazers all day long, and Portland's going to eat it up. And that's actually part of the magic of the franchise, and I think the team is playing with fire a little bit here. But what they want to sound like is competing with every other franchise out there on a global level in terms of their image, in terms of their broadcast, in terms of their arena, in terms of their everything. The asset to that is, yes, you look like you're playing with the big boys. The drawback to that is you either look like you're kind of copying the big boys secondhand, although Calabro takes a backseat to no one, or more likely you just kind of get lost in that homogenous shuffle out there and you can't really distinguish a Portland broadcast or a Portland arena or whatever from anybody else. Now, I think they're successfully negotiating that in terms of like arena food and what have you, but we're moving toward a less Portland version of the Trailblazers.
Yeah, it was, and don't get me wrong, Calabro is one of the best out there. It was just a very foreign sounding broadcast to a homer Blazers fan. And that's exactly what I am. I mean, I may write analytically and try to be as unbiased as I can, but when I'm sitting in there taking in a broadcast, I want it to be a certain way. And yeah, I like the professional broadcast. I like it when the national team picks up a broadcast so I can hear another perspective every now and then. But that homey feeling that, you know, that Portland feel that they've had with Mike Barrett and Mike Rice for so many years was, whether you like it or not, was something of a level of comfort and familiarity. So I think you're right. I think that they're playing with fire to an extent if this doesn't work. I think ultimately it will work, particularly for Calabro. And now I solicited a little bit of feedback, initial feedback from folks on what their take was on Twitter. And some of it was good, some of it was bad. And it kind of hits on a lot of the same notes we're talking about, is that one complaint was that these guys aren't familiar with Portland basketball. They aren't familiar with the town and the culture. And I'd argue against that to a point. Calabro's a Northwest guy. Lamar Hurd has worked in the Northwest quite a bit. I think they're pretty familiar with the Blazers, the team, the history, and things of that nature, particularly Calabro, who was the Sonics broadcaster and probably brings a unique perspective from the I-5 rivalry. But almost everything was a glowing praise of Kevin Calabro for the most part. Not so much for Lamar Hurd. I think part of that comes from the wacky uncle role that Mike Rice played. I saw a lot of people just when I was, you know, I had TweetDeck up and searching for for Mike and Mike and things of that nature. And a lot of folks, the initial reaction was that they missed Mike Rice, they missed Mike Barrett, but particularly they missed the banter back and forth and the relationship those two have. So I don't think it's fair to judge Calabro and Hurd on one preseason game on how their interaction and their relationship went.
Well, especially the first one. I mean, because they've got to start down the middle, right? They can't, they're shooting blind otherwise.
Yeah.
And they will develop a rapport, and you will see them get more indoctrinated into the culture and be able to translate that a little better. At the same time, again, this may not be the goal. Look, the WWE had this down in spades, and it's worked to an extent. I think there's been some setbacks to an extent too, but basically their take was, look, our hardcore fans are going to watch, participate, engage no matter what. What we need to do is appeal to an audience that goes beyond that. Now, Portland's not the same situation because they're one of 30 franchises, not the dominant one in their sport or sports entertainment, whatever. But I think there is a little bit of that there. I wouldn't be surprised if the thinking is, look, we're not going to draw a huge percentage of Portland fans based on this emotion, this provincialism. If we're going to get more Portland fans, it's because we became a big deal nationally and because it became cool again. And the way to do that is to appeal to a more national audience, to look professional, to seem a little bit LA, where all these guys, by the way, who are running the team came from, except for Paul Allen. But the underlay, I mean, Chris McGowan came from Los Angeles, Neil Olshay came out of Los Angeles. So look, I think there's a sense that enough of the localism. It's taken us as far as we can. Now let's bring some glamour to this.
So are you essentially saying that Mike Rice was the Portland equivalent of Jerry Lawler?
Well, I see Mike Rice more like, Mick Foley, that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I've got a picture of Mike Rice on a sock puppet, and I just
he would do it. I mean, yeah. I'm surprised he'd commentate with it. And oh gosh, who was the guy? Daniel Bryant, was it, that everybody kind of liked? Mm-hmm. He was like a kind of, that's kind of Barrett, But at the same time, these guys were both beloved, but neither one was The Rock. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe you bring in Calabro hoping that he will have that kind of appeal, that local people will like him because of the voice, because of the cachet, because of the experience, and because national people think he's cool and national people will like him because he's maybe, frankly, easier to listen to on that level than Mike and Mike were. And I can understand. I mean, I love Mike and Mike. I count them as people that I have known and respected and talked with and all this stuff, right? At the same time, I can understand why when people were tuning in from a national level, they might have perceived Mike and Mike as a bit provincial, a bit homeristic, especially 3 or 4 years ago when the commentary on the referees was pretty constant, and Barrett and Rice were certainly pro Portland in almost every interpretation and every situation. And to be fair, they may have been helped along in that, or at least not tampered with in that. I think at one point that was seen as the key to driving viewership, to get people emotionally riled, to get them on your side, and everything that's not on your side is totally unfair. I think there's been a shift away from that, and I think Mike and Mike were probably casualties of that.
Yeah, I think you and I are in the same boat there, where I think part of that appeal to the audience and the emotional level of and how everything was driven may have been poked and prodded by management in the past. You're coming out of the Jailblazer era. You're got Brandon Roy, you get Greg Oden, you get LaMarcus, and you get all these guys, and you're trying to gin the support and rally the community around these guys. So you're trying to build this us against them mentality, and the broadcasting crew becomes a part of that, right?
Well, and also, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, what else did they have to build on after Roy and Oden went down? I mean, there was Aldridge, sure, but it's like you've got a potential gaping void there. Now, it only dipped for 1 year, and then you got Damian Lillard, but still, you're like spit, promise, hope is what you're building on, so you need that emotion.
Yeah, if you're banking on Lillard being that guy before he gets there, you're probably not going to have a job all that long. So, yeah, I get where they're coming from in that aspect. And there was a couple things tonight that I saw in the broadcast in particular that came through as different in how they broadcasted the game. So, for Blazers fans, I don't know if they noticed this or not, but one thing that I saw is that not once during the entire game did I see the camera cut away to Calabro and Hurd in the booth. I thought that was a little bit strange. They didn't, not during timeouts. They didn't, you know, in the past, whether it was Mike Rice hawking some product or just to go to them for some timeout banter, the camera never once cut to them. And I'm fairly certain that's under a directive from management because of how they want to present the product.
It may be, or it may be just they're easing him in. I don't know where it comes from, but you can bet that that's intentional. That's what happened.
Yeah, so I think that's something to kind of take care of or to take away from that. I think it may be there to allow them to build that. That way the camera doesn't cut to them in any awkward silences or put them in a situation where they don't really have that camaraderie and that bond to build off of to just kind of riff back and forth without, you know, stumbling over each other. So I thought that was kind of a bit of a, I don't want to say strange, but a little bit odd that when you're so used to that banter back and forth that it wasn't there.
Well, I think the point might be, and again, we shouldn't draw too many conclusions here because I'm certain they'll start cutting to them. It's just going to happen. It's just what you do. At the same time, the point could be drawn that the shift in focus is away from an announcing brand and more letting the product on the court be the brand, and then the announcers sell that. I mean, and Calabro, this would be kind of old school philosophy, and Calabro certainly knows how to do that, and he knows how to generate that kind of focus on what's going on the court and get himself over as well without ever becoming the focus. And, you know, Mike and Mike had a particular brand. They just did. And it's sometimes that brand meshed with what was going on. And it's sometimes you just noticed, hey, this is totally Mike and Mike. And you may have loved it, and some people may have hated it, but it was there. And, you know, towards the end, too, you got the T-shirts and you got the all that. They were becoming their own personalities. And that may be a joy, but that may also have been something that the team decided, you know, we just don't quite want to go this way, and we're not sure we can undo this. So let's start a new brand that's more centered on the court and have a guy like professionally ease people into that rather than becoming the brand.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. And that's probably what the case is as it's going on. One other thing as far as visual viewing of the game is, this probably isn't huge or anything like that, but one thing we were discussing was the lighting on the court was visibly different. The basketball court pops like you wouldn't believe. And I think little tweaks like that, and it kind of goes along with the same line of how the product is being packaged and how it's being sold to an audience. And it doesn't have like a Forum or Staples Center feel where, you know, you black out the seats, but making the product stand out more, and again, not going to the broadcasters and letting the product itself do the selling, I think it all kind of goes towards the point of how the Blazers want to package this up.
They
and
know
sell
who
it.
They want to be. They yeah. know who they want to be now, and they know that they've got marketability on the floor, which they haven't had for a long time. So all these things, I mean, it's symbolic, right? They're putting the focus right there, and more power to them. I mean, that's probably a really good decision right now. Whether they end up with the baby going out with the bathwater remains to be seen. But I tend to think they'll be okay. And I personally, I'm old school. I have advocated for the product and the story being on the floor for good or ill for a decade now. I mean, that's basically what we've tried to do. That's how we've conducted ourselves all the years of Blazers Edge. We don't talk about ourselves a whole lot. We talk about what's going on the floor, and people talk about us, sure, but that's the secondary point. And I think that the Blazers have have picked up on the possibility of that now that they are looking at Damian Lillard, now that they are looking at CJ McCollum, now that they're looking at this chemistry and going, this is something that people are really going to buy. This is a story that we are unabashedly proud to tell.
On a totally personal note, hearing Kevin Calabro's voice again and his cadence and how he calls a game, it made me really wish that the Blazers get somebody to run on the court during a game and tear their shirt off, much like Kevin Harlan got to call, and give Calabro a chance to call that situation. Because the way he calls it is just, it's so professional, and it would be in such stark contrast to the way Harlan called it. And something like that would just be so incredibly entertaining. I don't know why that popped into my head, but I could just imagine how he would call that. And I think it would be something that Blazers fans could get behind.
Kevin Calabro is one of the best, and there is zero doubt about that. And it'll be interesting to see how this evolves. And our time, speaking of, is done. We will try to respect the hour mark or a little bit less in the off season. So we want to thank you guys for being with us. We will be with you throughout the preseason, of course. Stay tuned to David McKay on site. Stay tuned for Chris Lucia and friends for a league-wide preview of the opponents and all the other features that you know and love, and over speculation on Evan Turner and whether Al-Farouq Aminu's three-point shot is ever coming back, and et cetera, et cetera. You will find it all on Blazers Edge. For my partner, Dan Marang, this is Dave Deckard. We were happy you were with us. We will see you again next week.